The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you.
Hello, listener, and welcome to The Big Red Couch. This is episode 60, and our prompt for today comes courtesy of episode 50 from Anim5 and reads, "Have you tried resurrecting it and killing it again? I am Craig, here at the Big Red Couch Recording Studios, and at the manor we have..."
Ben, hello.
So, yeah, have we tried resurrecting it and killing it again?
Over and over, it just doesn't work.
I've got to admit, the IT parallels were, well, I mean, they're obviously built in, but kind of difficult to avoid on this one.
Let's apologise in advance for any horrible workplace trauma that gets uncovered during this episode.
Any horrifying flashbacks, that kind of thing?
Indeed.
Please don't sue us.
But to help things go a little bit more cheerfully, we've got creative feedback from listeners who are way ahead of the game, and so we've got quite a bit of content to approach.
How would you like to do this one?
Alex's idea and mine are a little bit similar, so we could do those side by side, but if you've got an idea, we should punt that first and see how we go.
Okay, well, I found it incredibly difficult to get away from the necromantic tech support angle. I eventually kind of found a way to dodge around it, which was basically to reach back to a game I ran a little while ago for Tonya and Gulo T, and for the very last session, Kevin, which was basically a fantasy crime procedural type game. So basically where I went with this one was fantasy setting CSI, for want of a better description. The group of presumably mages and shamans and whatever, whose job it is to really investigate the hell out of crimes in a fantasy setting. That's kind of the broad pitch, but running it as a game, I would be pretty blatantly ripping off the original CSI sort of Las Vegas edition, with that whole thing where, sure, in theory, the techs should never be leaving their labs, but because that would make for a really boring show, you put them out there in the field and they get involved in stuff. That's how I would run this one. I would have the magical specialists who are looking into the crime, and in this case, they potentially have the ability to resurrect the deceased to find out who murdered them, which then leads into the whole thing of, is the deceased telling the truth?
I've definitely run in quite a number of fantasy scenarios where testimony from the recently deceased, or occasionally, why torture somebody when it's quicker to kill them and interrogate their spirit, that zigzags across so many moral boundaries, it's not funny. Depending on what technique you use, you can get factually correct yes-no answers using some systems from the dead. Which, you know, it's a bit of 20 questions, but can get you to what you need way faster if you're after specific details.
And without so much of the ow, no, arg, etc.
Yes, yes. The transcript is a lot more straightforward.
If slightly grotesque.
But presumably, yes, you're playing law-abiding agents of the establishment, so rounding up the witnesses and conducting a seance is probably off the cards.
Well, certainly killing all the witnesses and conducting a seance, unless you have a no-consequence resurrection system going on, yeah, that is probably off the cards.
Well, it does play into the blasé impression you get from the prompt. It is, it's not working, just turn it off.
True, yes, if you're trying to interrogate somebody's ghost and it's not working, well, you bring them back, kill them again, and try, yeah. That is astonishingly blasé, yeah.
You put aside the magical equivalent of the paddles and go, look, you're making this very difficult for us. Would you mind trying a bit harder?
If I'm making literary allusions, then my original idea was sort of the Terry Pratchett version. This is more the Stephen Erickson.
Wee bit, yeah.
I'm not sure where to go system-wise with it. The temptation, if I was trying to get people have these specialties, but everybody's kind of a generalist vibe of many of the CSI shows, would be to go with a system that very much supports generalist, very broad skills So maybe something like Quags or Fate Accelerated. Dresden Files, maybe, though it might be a little too specific is the wrong word, but there might be too many skills required, if that makes sense.
Dresden Files wouldn't be able to generalize, wouldn't have enough general skills, or wouldn't have enough sort of specific skills to say, I'm a phlebotomist or a psychophlebotomist or something, because everything is like big skill packages.
I cannot, off the top of my head, remember whether Dresden Files basically has enough skill points, for want of a better word, to enable somebody to be a generalist with a bit of a specialty. Or whether you'd end up with that circumstance of, I am totally kick-ass at a bunch of magical shit and I can't do anything else.
You tend to play in those sorts of games slightly archetypical characters. Depending on what sort of hill you're standing on, people tend to still be peaks in sort of various areas. It's not likely to be as fine-grained as all that. And it depends how... Well, the idea might be that you use the aspects to describe the their techniques. I mean, you could go down to something as simple as Fate Accelerated and say, I'm the careful one, I'm the forceful one, I get results because I shout and I do the most risky thing. So you could define it more. If that's what you're concerned about, whether people will be doing different things rather than them all going, they all stand around in a circle and go, I roll forensics, critical success.
Yeah, that would be something that I would actually be concerned about, is how to do a gaming version of it and make it interesting. So yeah, the Fate Accelerated approach might be the way to go on that one.
You would use the same sort of approach. You would say that our shaman is the guy who takes crazy risks, who will, you know, he draws down the spirits of the actual spirits of the actual death and challenges them to some sort of contest to find out a piece of information. Well, the guy who is all about thaumaturgical mysteries will pile up stones and rows and figure out what's going on that way, which is kind of is really specific and fastidious way of doing it. So they've got different approaches, so you get to say, okay, they're doing different things and finding out different kinds of information. If you approach it from a really technical system, people should have different ways of finding information. And if you approach it from like a very general sort of approach-oriented system, you have them create those distinctions between the characters. So everyone's got something different to do.
It's the sort of circumstance where I wish I knew a little bit more about the gumshoe system, because that might actually be a good fit for this in terms of it is about investigation.
My suggestion, and I hate myself a little bit for this, would be Dragon Quest. Not the video game that people are probably way more familiar with, but the old SPI adventure series where everyone's a generalist because you could specialise, but it was totally classless, and as the old Munchkin joke goes, no one had any class, and you could pick up professions, and each of the colleges of magic had a different range of spells. They definitely had different focuses, but even on its most balls-to-the-wall combat front, it was game about information, because each college had counter spells, which would help you resist the magic if it was cast at you in an offensive fashion. Most of those spells were pretty offensive, and knowing what you were going up against, if you found a pair of smoking boots in the middle of the street, you'd go, probably a fire mage. But if you didn't know for sure, it might have been like a Star Celestial or maybe a very sneaky air mage, who knows. If you didn't know, you would be at a significant disadvantage. And finding out these details, and one of the common talents between multiple colleges, is an ability called Detect Aura, which could tell you simple things, but things that are virtually game information about spells, people, etc. Stuff that was, it almost peeked outside of the fantasy of the world into elements of the actual game.
Detect rule set, that kind of thing?
Almost. And this fed back into the fact that this was how people understood magic. And only occasionally came up with totally anachronistic things like fish clocks and...
Fish clock.
A fish clock is where you catch a fish, kill it, and then go use your detect aura ability to say, time since death. Some people insist this is down to the nanosecond, and they can look at their fish and say, right, X amount of time has expired. Most people would say that, yeah, you've got a, like a more whimsical fantasy interpretation of time, and you can't tell for sure. But one of the things with the with spell mechanics in that game is they were very precise about how long spells lasted for in seconds, minutes, hours, the volumes and so forth. So magic was obviously very mechanical from where the players were looking at it from, and it kind of seeped into how the characters would look at it. Because, you know, they know that they could, their spell would be exactly 100 feet across. It's a pretty good way to measure exactly 100 feet across.
I will admit the fish clock thing instantly made me think of the solution to determining longitude.
Mm-hmm.
Because that basically involves knowing when noon is at a reference point. And so if you can kill a fish at precisely noon in Greenwich, and then just transport the damn thing around and know, you know, you don't need to know it to the nanosecond. Even to the minute is probably good enough.
Oh, and a lot of abilities triggered on noon or midnight or something like that. So longitude wouldn't be a problem for magic users in that particular setting, because they're plugged in celestially to the mechanics of the universe quite a deep way. There were not a baker's dozen of different approaches, but there were plenty of different approaches for getting information out of the world, and some of them involved necromancy, and some of them involved talking to necromancers, which is something you should never do. No, they were all over the place. Necromancers were probably the most civilized bunch. The rest are all yahoos or psychopaths.
Whereas you'd assume that necromancy at the very least leads you to a sort of a calm.
A lot of them wind up being very fastidious and cleaning up after themselves.
Yeah, it's just manners, I suppose. And after, I suppose after the fourth or fifth time you've had a corpse shout at you and attempt to hit you with a shovel because of the mess you made of its gravestone, you're going to you're going to start tidying up a little bit better.
Yes, you're going to pick up on your manners a bit.
Well, I think we've kicked Fantasy CSI to death, and that is an interesting idea. I hadn't actually thought of the whole Dragon Quest Guild as an option, but it does very much fit in.
The system has lots of different approaches. You could just flip open the book and say, all right, our necromancer can do this, our rune mage can do this, boom, boom, boom. And you could assemble a party of people who could protect themselves, could do all these sort of investigations, and already have the framework of a world and a system in which information is extremely important. One of the prime aspects of the game is you didn't know what was going on, you bloody well found out, either in advance or in a sudden flash.
Yes, either in advance or potentially to your detriment.
Yes.
Shall we do an audience response?
I'll read Alex's, and then I'll tag on what my ideas vaguely were about that. From Alex. So clearly you've got a world where there are undead, and the process of eliminating them is sufficiently complex to require a dedicated group of troubleshooting tech support types who are so used to this that they're blasé about it. This led me to think, well, if there's a dedicated group for helping people kill these things, why wouldn't there be one that helps create them? So effectively you've got Get Smart, where instead of control and chaos, you have two rival groups of necromancers who go around posting flyers with slogans like Dial 1-800-EVIL for free consultation with our black magic experts. Small print. Consultation is defined the first 30 seconds. After that, it will cost you one mortal sin per 5 minutes to be determined by Doom Incorporated at some future time. I couldn't come up with a good flyer for the good guys, but I think you get the feel I'm going for here. Cheesy, stereotypical, square-jawed American hero types, or British, whatever. Pick your heroic cultural stereotype of choice. Cheers, Alex. And thanks, Alex. Cool.
Mm.
Yes, that's definitely is somewhat like the laundry, but a little bit more light-hearted. Messing with reality tends to get things to go horribly, horribly wrong.
Yes, it also reminds me vaguely of the Nightwatch series of books.
The wacky Russian otherkin.
Yeah.
Doing things in a very... I think it's the feel was the Plumbers of the Apocalypse. A very low-scale, vaguely gritty approach to fantasy where people are doing their day jobs and saving the universe. Sometimes at the same time, but...
Mm. Often from the guy across the hall.
Possibly. Yeah, well, they both punch in at the same clock and... go to work trying to thwart one another.
Yes, well, it was just the trading of sins and that kind of thing, because that was something that came up in the books, that, you know, it's things like, well, such and such a person owes me a fifth level intervention.
There is a currency or a business model around their interactions, and they've got quite political over time. So yeah, that's an interesting thing.
This one, to be blunt, I like a hell of a lot more than my one, because... Yeah, I desperately didn't want to do necromantic tech support in and of itself, because that's dangerously close to various day jobs I've had, without the necromancy for the most part.
For the largest part, yes.
Though I have done stuff involving graveyards, that sounded wrong the minute I said it out loud.
Indeed.
I should not have said that.
Anyone who's been in IT for any length of time has either killed a runaway process or resurrected a dead machine or other things that, you know, ways of phrasing what we do to make them sound more dramatic and important than they actually are.
I did once try to convince somebody that the reason the printer wasn't working was due to poor desk feng shui, so I rearranged a few things, restarted the computer, and it worked.
Of course it did.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I don't honestly know whether being control or chaos would be more fun. This would be a fun setup if you could find the right system and the right groups of players to do a two separate party type of game. This would be a fun one, because it's kind of lighthearted.
Well, it looks like you'd be aiming for something fairly lighthearted there. If you're going to template Get Smart, which, you know, is as about as distant from the realities of Cold War spycraft as you could actually get, so yeah. I was working something fairly similar, and it is more of a commentary on where you would be in a if that phrase was a phrase, the kind of world you'd be living in would be a fairly strange one. And the backstory I came up with it was sometime early in the 20th century, practical necromancy became a thing. Presumably Aleister Crowley or something was involved. Right in his bellywork, I think. The idea that you could bring the dead back to life into some degree, and well, maybe they're not completely fixed. Maybe they're, let's not say flesh-eating abominations, but kind of zombie-like. And the idea is that over time, this may have come about during the First World War, where you have this awkward thing where you're suddenly in a large-scale conflict, you have large numbers of dead people, no clear idea what to do with them at the moment, and being able to get your soldiers back, at least to some degree, sounded like a really good idea at the time. And you've had a 20th century where weapons of mass destruction have been developed and then kind of shelved, or at least put to one side, because you could use them, but what you would effectively be doing is handing over a giant, very easy to maintain, pretty easy to control army to your opponent. So the notion that the world has actually been balanced in a sort of a Cold War, a situation where you could actually, attacking your enemy could be effectively a recruitment drive. And the fact this has been going on for a while, and processes have been refined, and it's not the cause well understood. Effectively, you can impart life into an inanimate creature, bring it back, and it's functional at some level, and this level of independence and thought and memory and so forth has been climbing, and you've basically got to the Nexus 9 level, where they're pretty much as good as new. You know, with a little bit of reconstructive surgery and the right doses of formaldehyde, you've basically got the person back. However, what you do have is an army of room temperature sociopaths that are now vital part of your economy, because up till now they've been pretty good for like manual labor and doing very, very simple tasks, and now they're becoming more and more able to be sort of trusted with complex things, to think more independently. And you've developed this quite dangerous underclass of the living dead. And out there somewhere, someone is bound to have started thinking for themselves. It's a little bit inspired by the British TV show In the Flesh, where there was this random resurrection event a couple of years ago, and they've managed to medicate and counsel the sufferers, because in their immediately revived state, they did some pretty terrible things, and a lot of them aren't very happy about that. And then they're basically being made up and put and being reintegrated in society, which is dealing with lots of other sort of parallels of social isolation and other things, with a heavy, heavy dose of British humour. Well, almost humour.
Puts me in mind of, there's a book that either went by the title of Necroville or The Terminal Cafe, depending on which publishing block it came from, that had nanotech-derived resurrection of the dead. And so you have this situation of a huge dead working class and many of the issues surrounding that.
Yeah, and again, you'd be troubleshooters, as it were.
Would they be resurrected troubleshooters?
I would probably go with splitting the party 50-50, because I tend to like that. If you're dealing with, like, a dystopian weirdness, the idea that you give, from reasons of oversight and so forth, you split the team between living people and non-living people, because, you know, set a thief to catch a thief, you set a zombie to stop another zombie rising, a zombie uprising or something.
Yeah, set a zombie to catch a zombie. Not quite as catchy, I grant you, but...
They probably don't say zombie, that's probably quite the slur. I kind of think of some along the same lines of as Alex, or, but possibly considerably more grotesque.
Yeah, yours is much less fluffy than the necromantic get smart approach. I can't really think of anything else to kick around on that one. Disadvantage of a nicely contained idea like Alex's one is sort of a, yeah, that's a cool idea. Aside from questions of what system you'd use, you can't really add anything to it. And the, what do we do about the growing problem of resurrected citizenry wanting civil rights and their own fortress in the mountains and serfs is kind of an interesting one.
Did I say Nexus 6 or Nexus 9?
I think you went with 9.
I went for 9. I can't remember which one of them was Blade Runner. One of the
6,
Blade Runner
I believe.
The 6, yeah. Okay, so we can dub in Nexus 6.
Or we can just leave it there and see who notices.
Yeah, true. We get some sort of feedback on that.
Before I forget, there was also the British show The Fades, which, while it didn't have resurrected people, did have extremely agitated ghosts in it, and covered not the same territory, but similar territory, though that was an out-and-out horror story. Whereas yours is kind of, it's a dark one, but it's not a horror yet. Should I do Taz's one?
Sure.
Okay, Taz writes, "Oh, those silly murder hobos, always trying to milk more XP out of an encounter or botching their summoning spells. Sorry, dudes, you've run out of things to sacrifice to your for your spell. Summon XP demon has very specific material components. The game starts with a party of mid to high level characters out for their weekly dungeon grind. When they get stuck in a lair with lots of death traps and a rod of infinite resurrection, the only way out is to die and die often. Warm up those saving throw dice. The characters will be lucky to get out with the bloody and torn shirts on their backs. The rod of infinite resurrection is, of course, indestructible. Grab some popcorn and turn the gore up to 11. Will it be a TPK? Or can they work together as a team and make it out of the trap? And as the door says, tunnels of terror, roaring with laughter, a comedy of errors, partaking hereafter. Trap."
Yes. That's a worry. Harking back to the old school.
Yeah, there is a science fiction novel, and I cannot for the life of me remember the name of it, unfortunately. I was unable to track it down when searching just now and also a little bit earlier, that basically has a complete death trap of a maze, I think, on the moon, and a science fictional MacGuffin allowing a duplicate of a person to be created, sent into the maze, and then when that person dies, their memories jump back to the original.
Right.
Something like that. And so you've got somebody who is just dying their way through this maze as they figure out where not to go. Which is kind of what this vaguely reminded me of.
So, something where you're brute-forcing a bunch of death traps. I did play a bit of I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream yesterday, so yeah, I definitely get that feeling.
Equally, I can see some references to bits of the Log Horizon anime, and the whole approach to assaulting very high-level raids, where the assumption is that everybody's going to get killed multiple times, as you figure out how to accomplish the task.
Yeah, I guess that's normally when you're playing a come and get me bro, mechanically focused GM versus players game, where, you know, the challenges are set there to challenge the players to make the best use of the mechanics that they can and so forth. Normally you're building in a buffer. Normally you're saying, right, we want to be able to get through this next fight with some hit points and, you know, most of the party standing. When you can go for, we don't have to get through this encounter, we just have to learn something about it, and we don't actually have to survive, it could be interesting.
Well, if it's a complete death trap dungeon that doesn't involve a whole lot in the way of critters, that means the damn thing's going to reset every time. Though I can potentially see a party taking the approach of, Well, we can't get through that trap, but we can probably do enough damage to it before we die that once we resurrect, we can just walk through next time.
We are going to clog it up.
Clog the trap with our corpses. If I was doing a less... Because, I mean, this one's kind of a comedic approach, which sounds fun, and particularly for a one-sessioner. If I was doing a much less comedic version of it, the temptation to have the Rod of Infinite Resurrection work with a bit of a sting in the tail. It might be very difficult for the players to play, but I'm imagining something that it's effectively more like the Rod of Infinite save points.
Right, you could take a snapshot of the party at a certain condition. You could do this as much as you like, but they're going to come back to that condition. So, yeah, there's, again, video games equivalency there. The fact that your character hitting zero hit points or whatever the death state is no longer something that you need to be as concerned about. What you end up doing is burning other resources, which, you know, they might have items or charges or something like that, or equipment that, you know, that isn't infinite, or do the epic MMO thing where they do the nudie run back to their equipment so they can pick up their stuff, or they doff everything to go and charge and find out what's around the next corner so they don't lose their gear.
I am imagining a bunch of completely naked adventurers having improvised a grappling hook on the end of a line, trying to hook their equipment back from their own blasted carcasses around the corner, because the equipment made it saving throws, but they didn't. Yes, if I could think of a way of doing it, and I don't think there is one, the idea of the party kind of waking up back at the save point with no recollection of anything that happened after they hit that save point, basically going through this dungeon, which clearly has seen a lot of use, and there are just their own corpses everywhere.
I fancy that's a bit more either short fiction or, again, video game stuff. But yes, the idea that either you have the character being not knowing things until their corpse, they find their corpse jammed in the jaws of a traveling. Aha! That clearly wasn't a good place to stand. But what you're doing is you're removing, like, the character death as being a limitation. So, and aside from, like, equipment and so forth, what you come back to, the limitation is how much time and enthusiasm everyone has.
It's probably only a one-sessioner, because that's going to get old fast.
It depends. If it's, and again, it's an adversarial kind of thing. In fact, embraces and slightly mocks in a loving way that sort of adversarial relationship between GMs and players.
I am imagining circumstances of some desperately dangerous puzzle trap to get down a shaft, and the players just looking at each other and jumping, working on the theory that, well, we'll resurrect at the bottom, it'll be fine.
Well, it depends on the exact mechanics. So it's either, all right, we keep jumping down the pit until there's enough of our bodies that it's soft enough that one of us survives.
Oh, oh, that is just wrong.
It's pretty bad. Also, as the death is no longer an obstacle, it's like breaking a leg. It's like the, in fact, I'm looking at the case for Edge of Tomorrow right at the moment. It's the, no, wait, I'm fine, I can do it. Blam. Interesting. That's a curious one. You could make a knowing winking, we are having fun with the idea that, a couple of points here. Okay. First, this is the classic self-resetting, self-arming, hideously complex trap-filled dungeon.
Yep.
They are presumably on the inside, or there's a very compelling reason to come from the outside to the inside, but they also have the one thing that they need to brute force their way through. So either this is a setup. Somebody's gone, okay, these guys have messed with me for the last time. I make dungeons. They break dungeons. This is the ultimate dungeon. This is how I say no more. They are in the killingest dungeon ever with the one thing they need to get out. It's clearly a grudge match.
Shades of the movie Cube.
Yes, which is the other thing I'm looking at right now.
I'm getting more and more concerned about your bookcase as time goes by.
For a start, you can't have you can't have whatever device is allowing them to go infinitely resurrect leave into a greater campaign.
No, it only works in the dungeon, because otherwise
Oh, that's going to be bad.
It would just make a mockery of it. Hey, presumably they're either too traumatized to ever adventure again, or they're so inured to the being exploded experience that they take on the road as some sort of carnival act or something. Or the third option, of course, is what most adventurers would do, would take it and use it to bludgeon the rest of your fantasy universe to death with it.
That's a lot better than hiring themselves out for the most dangerous game.
Hey, the pay was good enough. Geez, they've gotten used to spending their multiple lives in a Super Mario-esque, Super Meat Boy kind of existence. Probably you'll laugh.
I'm imagining a circumstance if you combine this with the joke of the wandering monster ready room.
You could be getting a little too meta there.
Well, yeah, I'm just sort of imagining the circumstance of if you've got a dungeon that's got all the traps and everything, but it's also got various monsters and that kind of thing. And so every so often it's sort of oh, you guys again. Didn't I kill you? Followed by that fucking rod of resurrection. Honestly, do you have any idea how much we hate the rod of infinite resurrection? I mean, that would be if you were going out and out comedic.
I'd be concerned you are pushing too far on that. I mean,
You're not feeling that one? I'm picking
yeah,
that vibe up, that you're not
there's a little
feeling
too much.
the.
There's a little too much commentary going on.
That's fair. Also, it would get very dark if you've got these completely immortal players carving their way through the non-immortal denizens of the dungeons. That's a great deal less funny. Okay, so scratch that idea.
Dungeon inhabitants have a hard enough time of it as it is. They live in these nonsensical worlds with ecosystems that can't possibly work, and people keep just turning up out of nowhere and killing them. So.
I am also imagining if it, rather than being the rod of infinite resurrection, it is in fact just something that applies to the entire dungeon. And coming across places where adventurers, possibly of many different species, have kind of reached a point where nothing is actively trying to kill them and had just settled down. They've just done the, you know what, we're sick of this. We're sick of the pit traps. We're sick of the golems. We're sick of those stupid, nonsensical, spiky things.
Sick of oozes digesting us from dawn to fucking dusk.
Yeah, we're gonna sit here and we're gonna grow fungus and we're gonna like it.
Yeah, that's possible. That would be a better setting explanation for what's going on. That there's this dungeon that has this weird anomaly that maybe every period of time it resets to a specific state, and the adventurers are injected into this, and there are a lot of things that if you did it carefully. Effectively, it's a groundhog dungeon. The idea that, okay, if you do your regular adventuring stuff, you could do all these things. However, if you don't get out of it in 3 hours, pop, you're back at the beginning. So, what ends up happening is you have to throw yourself through these things until you work out what the optimal path is.
Now, you've got to try to figure out how to speed run the dungeon.
Yeah, which.
Your idea of the it's clearly a grudge match to put somebody into a tomato pulper of a dungeon with the one thing that enables them to get out as a grudge match. I was just trying to think of why that might happen. I'm just imagining the circumstance of somebody who desperately wants the players out of the way, but for whatever reason isn't allowed to kill them, or at least
Or
permanently.
it's not in their idiom to just like have assassins sent after them until they drop dead of boredom or something. It's like it is Simon the Trapmaster, whose traps are known far and wide as being the most pulpy traps, and these dicks have just been circumventing and stuff. They're clearly out to get him. They're trying to ruin his good name. And at some point, Trapmaster Simon has snapped and has decided to build his pièce de résistance and put them inside it, just that they will, and the fact that they never get out is his guarantee that all of his traply wares are the best.
I like it. Solving two problems at once with the. Oh, those guys, yeah, they still haven't gotten out. Been in there for 3 years now.
You see the red light on the top of the citadel of the catacomb? Whenever that flashes, one of them has died. Yeah, sometimes I try and figure out whether it's more if it, the Morse code spells something out.
Yes. What? You mean that thing that's stroving so fast that people are having fits? Yeah. This is not a good day for them. Yeah, my best guess is they've reached the shaft with no way down and are trying to build a platform of bodies.
Eventually, they'll figure out about the razor wire.
Either that or eventually one of them will find stairs.
Yeah, that makes a grotesque sort of sense, doesn't it?
Mm. So is that about it for this one, I think? I don't really have a lot to add. I mean, it's a really fun idea. Our own grotesque additions to it, notwithstanding.
Yeah, your mileage may vary.
Yeah, I am quite liking the Simon the Trap Master's guarantee, because by the time, you know, if the party eventually escape and figure out what the little fucker has done, oh, there is going to be some payback.
There will be. There definitely will be. That would be an interesting thing to establish. That would be something to mark your D&D dungeon call aside. It's like, right, you disassemble the heinous trap before it skewers you, and there's a little brass plaque on the inside of the panel with Simon the Trap Master presents Spiky Death.
Model 48.
Yes. And, you know, it just happens that the places they're going, Simon has contracted out to in the past, but they're managing to catch him initially as earlier work, and as they progress, as they level up, they see more and more of his newer stuff. But if they start taking scalps by collecting his brass plaques and so forth, and making sure that you're like, hey, we got past a Simon the Trap Master model 75 the other day. Look at this. It's yeah, he's gonna start taking names pretty quickly, and you could make it a running gag in the. A little bit of a continuity thing between your various ghastly death trap dungeons.
That would be a lot of fun.
Someone's got to design these things. It's not something that, you know, you just sort of... This DIY death trap dungeon thing isn't all it's cracked up to be, you know. People like YouTube videos and they write books, but, you know, mostly it's just people getting cut in half by accident in their sheds. It's like, clearly there's got to be somebody who does this for a professional job.
Also, yes, if the party bragging, hey, we defeated a Squishmeister 83 the other day. I mean, I am now imagining a world where there is some level of communication of, you know, sort of the Dungeon Gazette, so that the word gets out.
Simon the Trapmaster's going, this bunch.
I am so sick of these guys.
No, that would be pretty cool, actually, to have not just your various, you know, overlords and despicable types getting all the kudos. Because, you know, clearly each of these guys is they're one-hit wonders. They build their dungeon. They contract out to the best for the traps, because everyone knows, you know, you've got to have a professional look after these things. It's like doing your own electrician work. If you don't do it properly, the place will burn down. So yeah, they contract this stuff out, and you never know. You could throw in a little side job about, you know, this somebody is pretending to be Simon, make all these terrible, terrible, barely lethal traps and flogging them off.
Or alternatively, ones that are just poorly constructed, so they sort of, you know, go in there, trigger the first trap, which punches a hole in the wall, knocking out a support pillar, and the entire dungeon collapses.
Yes, that would. That would be amusing if halfway through it was like, look, okay, I know we've not been the best terms in the past, but if you see anyone who's passing my work off as theirs, could you let me know?
Yeah, could you give them a bit of a killing? I'm sure it'll be okay. It's a professional courtesy thing. Well, it'd be hilarious if that was that is the way that Simon the Trap Master gets them into the dungeon in the first place. It's sort of yeah, you guys are pretty good. Can you test this one out for me?
Ooh, yes. The complete heel turn. It's like, yeah, this guy's been effectively trying to kill us for years by proxy, but he's okay. We know what business he's in. We're in the same kind of world. It'll be fine. The doors come down and suddenly, ooh, ha, 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 ha. Ah, shit. He's gone complete evil overlord, hasn't he? Yep.
Should have seen that coming, shouldn't we?
Yeah, really should have.
Oh, should we leave it with the booming triumph of Simon the Trapmaster for this episode? Because that feels like a lovely note to end an episode on.
Yes.
So, thank you, Taz and Alex, for your ideas, which both of which were certainly better than what I came up with.
And hopefully we've been able to pollute and make them terrible, as usual.
Well, it is what we do. It's our niche. You gotta have a niche in the cut and thrust world of RPG podcasting.
All right, and thanks to Adam5 for the suggestion. Thanks, everyone, for listening to episode 60 of The Big Red Couch, and take care till next time. And look out for those traps. They're fucking everywhere.
Bye.
See ya.
Next time on The Big Red Couch.
My God, we have a lot of audience ideas.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to hoarde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!